Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's conversation with 91-year-old Bob Ramos of Ogden, Utah, originally from Georgetown, Texas. We're about to hear about his experiences with the 86th Infantry Division during World War II, but first let's clear this up. I introduced you as Bob, but your given name is Norberto. That's what your mother called you. How did the Army turn Norberto into Bob? Can you tell us that story?
There's more Anglo-Saxon in the barracks than Mexicans. So we became buddies. I could speak good English. My English was not broken. I could hold a conversation. So I could hold my own. I was so proud of this because no schooling.
Yeah. And so when you said Norberto, they couldn't say that?
Yeah, they kept asking, how do you spell that? How do you spell that? And I would tell them. And then they'd walk away. What's the translation for that? James or Pete or... They couldn't come up with anything. So one guy kept saying, I think his name is Roberto. I don't think he knows how to spell it.
They thought they knew better than you, huh?
Yeah. So I could hear him. The poor guy doesn't know his real name. He's Mexican, and he probably hasn't been in the country too long.
Even though you're born here.
Even though I was born and raised. So this thing started. Roberto instead of Norberto. Okay, Roberto translated Robert.
Yeah.
Nickname for Robert, Bob.
Uh-huh.
So lots of times, he says, do you mind if we start calling you Bob? Whatever. That's easy. Spelled the same way forward and reverse. Okay. Okay, Bob.
You've been Bob ever since?
Yeah.
So you go over as a replacement troop. You don't know where you're going to be sent. But the Battle of the Bulge has just wrapped up. They're still recovering from that. They've suffered a lot of casualties, so they need guys a lot of places, and they stick you with this 86th Infantry Division, the Blackhawk Division. And a lot of people don't know that the hockey team, the Chicago Blackhawks, got its name from your infantry division.
Right.
Because a guy from your division ended up owning that team, right?
Right.
How about that? So your legacy lives on every time they play hockey in Chicago.
We get into a personnel carrier kind of a vehicle. The guy says, okay, from here on out, no talking, no smoking. We're going to go into close to enemy front lines. Man, every word was heard and kind of kept in a pocket. This guy takes us to a tech sergeant, Roy Gregory, from Tennessee, in a tent. Little bitty flashlight for illumination. Finally, he gets to me. What's your name? And I tell him. And again, the same thing. How do you spell that? Where are you from? But I told it, I like to go by Bob. Good. From now on, it's Bob. On the helmet and whatever. So I get assigned to a squad. And a squad leader, Staff Sergeant Atkins, and get into a frontline rifle platoon. This is nighttime, about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm tired. I want to go get some sleep. Staff Sergeant Atkins says, Bob, let me talk to you. This is real. The Germans are across this river. We know they're sending patrols over here to see what we're doing. And we sent patrols over there. This is not a movie, son. I can remember those words.
Wow.
Son, this is not a movie. Consider yourself on the front line. So far, everything is quiet. But in about 2 hours from now, when it gets light, we don't know what the hell's going to happen. You say you want some nap time? We don't have cots here for that. Sit down. And it was raining. Sit down like the rest of the guys here. Cover yourself with your poncho. You're going to get wet, but this is it. So good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. And sure enough, as soon as he got daylight where you could tell with the little fog, all hell broke loose. So that was my day of baptism.
What does that mean? What kinds of things were you seeing and hearing and experiencing that you'd never experienced before?
I didn't get much sleep because I'm scared to death. Because every now and then we heard rifle fire. And then Sergeant Atkins assigned me to a kid, Nichols, in a foxhole, right in, so there was so much water in the foxhole, our boots, our feet are wet and so forth. But a poncho over the foxhole is not keeping the water out because the water is filtering into the hole. So I'm learning this is pure caca, you know.
Yeah, misery.
You can use your mess gear to take the water out, but you have to keep your eye out because you're in a combat zone. When we crossed the river and then we started fanning out, attacking a pocket here, I was a recruit. I'm attached to this young kid who has been in a few skirmishes before, so he's a little knowledgeable and well-to-do, so I'm holding my own to him like dear mother. Attack here and attack here. Find yourself a hole or something to protect yourself from incoming, and then orders come all of a sudden, get on a tank. This unit, get on these tanks that are coming out. Get on top of them because they're going to take off and chase a unit and so forth. This, is, to me, was just before the Ruhr pocket. The only thing that you could remember is the training that they gave you to protect yourself in this manner or that manner. And of course, most of it, when they said get in this tank, says, why? Why should I get in this? Get on the tank and tie yourself to it because it's going to take off. And maybe 2 miles or 3 miles, they'll stop, take cover, try to find a building, a hole, anything to protect yourself. And Sergeant Atkins was a good leader. He took care of his troops. His 15 and the squad.
What was the scariest thing to deal with?
The Germans had good weapons. They had a rifle that we called a burp gun, which was good and accurate. Their tanks were super tanks. Hand grenades, same thing. The mashed potato thing. And good fighting troops, I mean, they were good. When you know this and you get into your skirmish, you better be the best, more than him. Most of the time, we found ourselves 10, 20, 30 yards apart in a skirmish.
10, 20, 30 yards from the Germans?
Yeah.
Firing at each other at close range?
Right.
Tossing hand grenades?
We found out that some of these guys could really throw 10 yards and some 20 yards. We could do the same thing with a hand grenade if you could throw a baseball from home base to first, you're okay. But further than that, you don't know because I threw one, but I found out real quick I couldn't throw it like a baseball. So I had to run and threw it this way, over me.
Yeah, you got to scoop it.
Because the thing doesn't weigh. It's not that heavy.
Not heavy enough to fly that way.
Now, their potato masher thing, because of that handle, you can really throw that thing.
The German hand grenades with the long, slender handle and the protrusion at the top.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about being that close to the enemy.
At night, that's when it gets heavy, because you can tell where they're at if they fire their rifle or their pistol. And, of course, they can do the same thing to you. And Atkins and Williams told us, okay, if we face like that at night, you fire your, and then you roll over to the left, or you roll over to the right.
Fires, and then when they see your muzzle blast, move so they don't fire and hit you.
Right. All part of survival.
Yeah.
Kind of thing that you learn sometimes at the front.
Tell me about some of your closest calls, the times where you look back now and say, man, how did I survive that?
Thank me and the guy, Fred, I forget his last name, from Chicago. We knew that the Germans were not too far from us. Nightfall, just as dark as could be, and they were waiting for us to do something, and we were waiting for them to do something. So we're laying down with our M1, and I hear a tank, and this thing is coming toward us, but everything's quiet. Paul, the thing kept coming. And we didn't fire anything because this thing wasn't firing. The thing passed about 10 yards away from me and Fred. It just passed.
So you guys are in a foxhole?
No, we're not in a foxhole.
You're above ground.
We're just above ground.
But it's dark out.
It's like 2 o'clock in the morning.
You can't even really see it at first. You just hear it.
Yeah, when I heard it first, I whispered to Fred, hear anything? He says, I hear it, but I don't know where it's going. And it was coming slow, like he's searching. So then all of a sudden I look to the right, and as dark as it was, and the tank was black, it passed. It passed us.
You could just barely make it out, probably, huh?
And then the noise got, but he was like idling, like he's searching for some object to be thrown at him.
So if you had fired, you probably would have been killed.
We didn't have anything to kill that thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
you would have just bounced off of him.
Oh, yeah. It could have done some damage to the track, but all we had was a hand grenade. I told Fred later, if I'd have thrown this thing and disabled it, that tank would have been right there. So the guy could have just used his turret.
Yeah, he could have swiveled around and fired away.
Sure.
So but those had to be some pretty tense moments there waiting for it to pass.
Well, for recruit me, Fred had some experience with me and said,
told you to lay low.
And we didn't have a radio to pass the information down. And then we found out that this guy, much later, was looking to give himself up and his crew.
Oh, really? That's why he was going so slow.
But I'm not going to say, hey, guy, you got surrendered to me, because I don't know what was his intentions.
Yeah.
So that was my big, big thing, because Fred and I were just scared to death. And we don't have the equipment to disable this. We're just going to let him go on through.
You mentioned the Ruhr Pocket, and there was some awfully fierce fighting around there toward the end of the war in Europe. What kinds of things did you see, and did you ever have to deal with the reality of losing some guys that you had gotten to know?
Yeah, three of them. Lou Skinner for one. The Ruhr Pocket was just a huge, huge war. The big tanks, all kinds of tanks. The 86 plus, well, the divisions circled this valley, including Patton's units. They put up a good fight, but at that time, most of them were just saying, if they're Americans, let's give it up. If we're fighting Russians, we might not get a good treatment.
Yeah.
But if they're Americans, hell yeah. I saw two kids in a small village going through. We were marching on this road, and for some reason, I got out of line of marching because I had some candy in my pocket, and I broke ranks and I walked with these two kids, little kids by the fire that we were trying to keep warm. Got my hands in my pocket to give him some candy, and I heard Sergeant Gregory scream, Ramos, get back in line. I heard him, and I heard him afterwards. He chewed my fanny out for breaking ranks. I shouldn't have, but I've done it without even thinking, just to help two kids with candy that I just wanted to give to the kids.
Were you able to give it to them, or you didn't have time?
No, I gave it to them.
You gave it to them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was giving it to them when they screamed.
And you got in trouble for it?
Oh, yeah.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, it was worth it. They told me thank you and so forth. Just incidents like that, when one of us would get shot and so forth. Right away, who was it? Who got shot? Is it just a wound or is he dead? That was Skinner.
Yeah, you mentioned Skinner. What happened to him?
He got killed afterwards. We heard that he's buried at Arlington.
Was that hard to deal with? Someone that you knew not being there anymore?
Yeah. You know, we expect it, but when it happens, it hurts. It hurts.
Did you ever think, what if I'm next?
Oh, yeah, all of that time. All of that time because war. I mean, you're there to shoot each other to see who's going to get it first. Either you're going to get it first or he's going to get it first. Always in our mind.
Understandably so. It is break time again. Remember, you can check out photos and videos of Bob at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We'll hear how he was instrumental in the construction of the veterans home that he now lives in when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.